We'd invested in snow goggles at 83. I pulled them down over my eyes and climbed off the sledge to find an unfamiliar man standing on the snow up next to the tractor urinating on the uphill slope. I reasoned that there must be a bunk in the tractor and that two drivers must spell each other. Sure enough, the first driver now stuck his sleepy-looking face out the door, pulled on his goggles, and climbed out to join the other. They kept the door open, apparently so they could listen to wireless traffic. This came through in rare bursts, weirdly modulated. I could understand enough to gather that it was sledge operators exchanging information about conditions in the passes and who was where, but very little seemed to be getting through. When a transmission did erupt from the speaker, the two drivers stopped talking, turned toward the open door, and strained to follow it. Laro and Dag climbed out and went to the other side, the downhill side, of the sledge. I heard exclamations from both of them. They began talking excitedly. The drivers looked annoyed, since this made it difficult to follow the bursts of distorted speech on the wireless. I went around to the other side. From here we had a fine view down a snow-covered slope, interrupted from place to place by spires of black stone, to a U-shaped valley. We were on its north side. To our right, it broadened and flattened as it debouched into the coastal strip. To our left, it grew steeper as it ascended into white mountains. So we had made it over the summit of the coastal range and were descending toward one of the icebound ports. But that wasn't what had drawn exclamations from Laro and Dag. They were looking at a black snake, 10 miles long, wreathed in steam, slithering up the valley toward the mountains. A convoy of heavy vehicles, jammed nose to tail, all the same color.
"Military,"
announced Braj, climbing out of the sledge. He shook his head in amazement.
"You'd think a war was starting."
"An exercise?" suggested Laro.
"Big one," said Braj in a skeptical tone. "Wrong equipment."
He spoke with such a combination of authority and derision that I guessed he must be retired military, or a deserter. He shook his head.
"There's a mountain division on point,"
he said, and pointed to the head of the column, which I now noticed consisted of several score white vehicles running on treads.
"After that, it's all flatlanders."
He chopped air, aiming for the first of the dark Drummonds, then swept his hand down valley, encompassing the remainder of the column, trailing toward the frozen sea, which could be seen from here as a white, jumbled plateau crazed with blue fractures. A smear of yellow and brown marked the port we were trying to reach. A lane of black water had been gouged by an icebreaker, but was already fading as the ice crowded in behind it. I was not a Praxic and not an Eta, but I'd seen enough Spielies as a kid and heard enough from Saman to have a general idea of how the wireless worked. There was only so much bandwidth to go around. In most circumstances, it was plentiful. This was true even in big cities. But military used lots of it and sometimes jammed what it didn't use. The sledge operators up here in these mountains were accustomed to having a nearly infinite amount of bandwidth at their disposal and had grown dependent on it. They were always swapping reports on the weather and on trail conditions. But at some point during today's journey, our drivers must have noticed something new to them. Transmissions got through rarely and were of poor quality. Perhaps they had thought their equipment was malfunctioning until they had crested the pass and discovered this. Hundreds, maybe thousands of military vehicles, commandeering every scrap of bandwidth.